wonderful day, and I just want to thank everyone for coming in on such a gorgeous and amazing convention. While I'm up here, I'm going to take the time to thank my convention committee. Over here is Eva and Chuck. And your imagination and thinking up these wonderful panels, there's a sign-up sheet below for the 2015 convention. Also, we just had the diversity panel, and the unity and diversity items are on our Central Ontario website. These just came down 3 days ago. Are the guidelines? I can't remember. Guidelines, principles? And the policy is there. There's a big display on the main floor if you want to have a look at them or on the intergroup website. So without further ado, we have a wonderful speaker for you to close our convention out. Bob is from Buffalo Intergroup, and he's going to be our afternoon and final keynote speaker. So give a big round of applause.
Pounds. The number isn't important, but it's certainly reflects the fact that I probably had a problem with food. When I entered the program, I was somewhere between 325 and 350. I came in originally in about 1989 after I had some heart trouble. And I lost my weight and came back in 1993. I've been abstinent since September of 1993 and blessed with a fabulous abstinence that's thankfully been very simple. I'm a real simple guy and I can't do the complicated things. Simple is real easy for me. So when they said keep it simple, stupid, I knew they were talking to me. Let me start and say that when I was a very, very young boy, I always had trouble with food. And I had two loving parents who were wonderful people, and they never wanted to see me be harmed or feel badly. So if there was some reason that I didn't feel good, if I was crying, why don't you have something to eat? Just forget about it. Have something to eat. That's okay. Have something to eat. They were like typhoid Mary. You know, they give it to you, and they never got it themselves. But sure enough, that was the answer to everything. If something was good, we'd celebrate and eat. If something was bad, we'd forget about it and eat. This led to the fact that when I was 8 years old, I was singled out in my school, doubled out. There was another person with me, doubled out. We were brought down to the office and they told us we were too fat. At 8 years old, someone tells you you're too fat. Thank you very much. I'm 8 years old. Why don't you just tell me to hit myself over the head with a hammer? You know, it's just not what you tell an 8-year-old. You got to do this. You got to. You know, what are you thinking? Why are you doing this to an 8-year-old kid? So my whole life, from that point forward, I knew that I was too fat. I had to go to the special store and buy husky clothes, and I had to do all the things that fat people did. I lived that way. I was shamed to live that way, and because of it, I never wanted to open up. I didn't want to talk to people. I didn't want people to talk to me. So I developed two habits. First of all, I never told you anything, and secondly, if you came too close, you would get an earful of expletives, because I didn't want you getting too close so that you would ask questions about me. I didn't want that. Never had a date in high school. All through high school, never had a date. I went to college, and in college continued my streak of eating. And the opportunity, I was going to be a teacher, I was going to be a teacher of history. And the opportunity came because I was working a job at a hot dog stand. That was the hot dog stand I was working at. So, sure enough, school was not going great. You know, it was back during the Vietnam War, and they wouldn't give anything over to see because they didn't want anybody, they wouldn't send anybody to Vietnam, so they wouldn't. So, but school was not going well. I did not want to be a teacher. I was going to be a terrible teacher. Thankfully, I understood that. So I left, and I started to manage the hot dog stand that I had worked at since I was 15 years old. And stayed in food service the rest of my life that I was working. This was perfect. I could eat whenever I wanted. The foods that were there, nobody would bother me. Leave me alone. I'm as fat as hell, and I love it. Okay? So this is the problem. The problem is that I'm just isolating. I'm alone. I have plenty of friends and acquaintances. Friends with quotes, obviously, because I wasn't letting anybody close to me. And life was just not fun. It wasn't going well. Nothing was doing well. And I happened to meet this lady. She was going through a divorce, and she was probably pretty needy, and I certainly was needy. And I don't know how it happened, but we ended up getting married. So we got married, we had four children, and I continued on my merry way of eating and went to work at a college, same college I had attended, but never graduated from, but I was working there after that. And stayed in the food until I got up to 375 pounds. I was going into a diet program through a hospital, and they put me on a scale. I couldn't believe there were scales over 300 pounds. I never knew what I weighed because every scale I ever knew only went up to 300 pounds. I didn't want any higher. This thing out there, he's out of digital, 375, and it's flashing. Hell's it? It's beating or what? What's going on? So sure enough, it's flashing this way. Oh my God, this is, it was just demoralizing. It was just demoralizing. So as I had gone through this diet program and all kinds of other programs, this and that, the marriage, as you could well understand, started to deteriorate because it was not really based on love, and it was not really based on us being together and growing together. We had children together, and as they were approached, some were approaching the teens, some got into their teens. We had moved down to Florida, and I had worked there, and all of a sudden, I started getting heavier. I was about, probably about 300 pounds. I started getting heavier, bigger, bloated, and everything. And eventually came to find out that my kidneys had shut down because my heart was beating at about 200 beats per minute plus. And the kidney said, screw you. If you're going to treat me like this, I ain't working. You know, you're on your own. And how I got into the hospital, I'm not sure how I made it in alive, but I did. And they originally thought it was a kidney disease as well, so when they realized that it was heart, they gave me proper medication, then they slowed down, and the kidneys kicked back in, and I started losing weight, and everything was going to be just lovely, even though the marriage wasn't going well. We were all getting back to the right place. Moved back home to Buffalo in case I needed a heart transplant, because that wasn't the possibility of a bad heart, that I wouldn't need a heart transplant. We would need some people to be there, support for my wife as she was caring for me. So I found out that I wasn't going to be able to work much anymore after that. And when I got back into Buffalo, I started gaining weight, and I got scared. It was like in 1989. I found Overeaters Anonymous, went to the meetings. Oh, I became the hero of OAI. I lost this weight. Here I was. This is wonderful. All these things going on. And I was just arrogant and stupid. And I did not know what it meant to truly be in recovery. So when the marriage did fall apart, so did my OA life fell apart with it. Actually, we had an argument over OA. She was bitching that I was going to stay at the meeting. And I said, well, I'd like to go. Blah, blah, blah. Push comes to shove, screw you, we're done. So it took us 2 years, the 2 years of hating each other, living in the same house before we separated, but it happened. And I proceeded to gain from about 200 pounds up to about 350 again, close to that. And as we were getting separated and divorced, and this was sometime in 93, I don't know if the math works out right. In 93, I went and got, I was depressed, and I knew I was clinically depressed, so I had to go get meds for that. And they said, well, you can't get meds unless you get a counselor, so I had a counselor. So between antidepressants and a counselor for a year, I determined that it was determined both by them and myself that I needed to do something outside of this. I said, well, I'll try it away, and I said, I'll go back. Came back in the middle of 93. Right away, I wanted to help out. I'd be so grateful. And so I joined. I was the intergroup rep for my meeting. And coming up on the retreat in 1993 that we had, at the time we only had one. And we had like 10 people signed up for this retreat. And here it is, you know, a month away. And I, in all my fabulous wisdom, because I've been so humble, said, why don't we just cancel the damn thing if nobody wants to come? Maybe next year they'll think about it and they'll sign up early. So they gratefully ignored me. And just when I had the retreat, 30 to 40 people showed up, whatever it was. It was a wonderful retreat. And it was especially wonderful for me because I was there with three other male friends who were, we hung out at meetings together. We made a pact at retreat that said, We were absent this weekend. We did a great job, and we will stay absent from this retreat forward. And out of the four of us, I can honestly say that I'm still absent from that retreat in 1993. Those other gentlemen may or may not be in a different state of recovery. I don't know for sure. But it's because of that that I learned my first lesson of humility, because right after the retreat, they said, the person who ran the retreat said, well, I'm going to be retiring from doing this duty, and we need someone else to run it. And I'm like, here I was, I had already eaten crow, because I'm out of feathers, they're coming out of my mouth, I'm absent from this retreat, I told them they should cancel. And I said, well, I'll do it. And so for a number of years after that, I did leave the retreats. But a lot of the emotion from the pain of those years is gone. And that's the wonderful success, I think, that OA can give to a person, is that what at one point in my life, I would have never forgotten the pain, the misery, how I used to, I believed in God because I used to pray to him every night to kill me. I said, don't let me wake up in the morning. Don't let me wake up. What the hell am I doing here? Why would you want me around? And the prayer that I used to say day after day after day is, why don't you just blow up my heart and stop? And that's exactly what happened. I ended up with an enlarged heart. And then we were almost successful. I prayed a few more days, I might have been successful. But sure enough, God was a lot smarter than me. Got me to the hospital. Got me back in here. And as I get into the rooms, 1993 on is the story I like to concentrate on all the time. The story before 1993 is one of misery and pain. And I know we all like to hear the misery and the pain, but that's not the important part of the story. It's what am I doing? Am I doing it, as Ken said? Because it was the very next year when I was leading my first retreat, I was the person in charge of the first retreat. That's when Ken came. And Ken said to talk to us in 1994. And it was such a powerful message. And he was around, I don't know exactly when he passed. It was about, what, 98, maybe, something. But it was such a wonderful lesson. And he was a friend that I went to Ottawa a number of times to visit him. And it was just such a wonderful time. And that's the time, the last 20 to 21 years, is the time that's important, not the time of pain and suffering. We have to get through that. If we're suffering in these rooms today, the best thing you can do for yourself is finish off this abstinent day, because there's a good chance that most of us are abstinent today. There's people who maybe convince me some food, I don't know. But the thing is, you're probably abstinent today. When you go home today, stay abstinent the rest of the day. Feel the feeling. Let it just wash over you how wonderful it is to be abstinent, because that's what's key. The key is when we're abstinent, everything is possible. Everything is simple. Not easy, but simple. We've simplified it to the things that we can do and we will do. And that's what's key. The spirituality will grow in us. So let me go through some of the steps. I don't know if I'll make it through all of them or how I'll do it. I never know what I'm saying. Okay, I apologize for that. I don't really prepare much. But that was basically, you know, the first step is I was powerless and I didn't know what I was doing. I was absolutely a mess. And so I needed to find that power greater than myself. And I needed to find a power that was acceptable to me, because while I could see the importance of spirituality in identifying a power that I could relate to, I am not a religious person. I do not go to church unless you're dead and I'm coming to visit you, or one of your kids is getting married and I'm going to the service. Okay, I'm not a big religion guy. It's not important to me. And God bless all those people who can do it, because I think it's fabulous. I think it would be tremendously helpful if I could do it, but I just can't do it. So I had to identify some sort of God and some sort of, and I'm going to call him God. Maybe you're offended, too bad. I'm calling him God because for me that's what it is. And this God had to be somebody that I could relate to and somebody that I could be friends with. I didn't have any friends, remember. I had none. I was So sure enough, when I came back and was gaining my abstinence, I was writing a journal. Every day I would write a journal, and it was like a letter to God. And I would keep doing that and keep doing that. And so God became my best friend. And every single morning I would wake up, and I would wake up to say the Serenity Prayer, 12 steps, and then pray to God. I had this whole ritual, the whole regimen of things that I did. Make up your own. Don't ask me what I'm doing, because it's not important what I'm doing. It's important what you're doing. You do it. But as I went through the steps, I had meaningful passages of each of the steps, right from the big book mostly, that would help me to align myself with God. And then what I wrote, I could write about things that were bothersome to me, which was very important in the beginning of my recovery, to things that I was truly grateful for and blessed about later on in my recovery. So it didn't matter whether I was writing about a positive or a negative. I was writing to my best friend. God was my best friend. I didn't have a name for him. His name wasn't Joey or anything like that. He was God. And I respected the fact that he was superior to me. And that's why I needed him. He didn't necessarily need me. He had all of you guys. He didn't need me, but I needed him. So I would write that letter every single day. That letter became very important to me. And how it became important even more so is that while I was struggling, before I was writing this letter, what happened to me was I was walking, as we heard in the last session here, that walking is good for us. We did that walking. And in the walk, I'm crossing the street, and I said to myself, God, or I'm talking to God, I'm like, God, do me a favor, please. If I come to you, can together we solve my problems? And I almost fell on my big fat face. It was the first time in my entire life that I had humbled myself to say that I would go to God. That was the first time. It was hugely different, tremendously different from saying, God, let's us, you know, come on, let's sit around the table here. No, I'll go to you. I'll go on your terms. And we together can solve the problems that have led me to this disease. It was that bolt of lightning, like so many old AA people got, that was so such a blessing for me. It was just such a blessing. And from that point on, once I could identify the fact that I needed to go to God, it was so much easier to be to write the letters, to do this, to take the steps, to open the door to being there for God, because you know, that's what it's all about. We can't solve our own problems. We tried. How many diets have we gone on? I don't know about you, but I used to bet money. I would win every single diet I ever went on because I could lose weight faster than anybody else because there's money involved. All right? And 2 minutes later, I'm stuffing food in my face. I was never successful. I'm assuming that some of us were never successful. Some of us maybe could do it on our own. I don't think any of you are sitting in this room, though. So, once that was established, once it was established that God was here and I was going to go to Him every day, it was so much easier to take that third step, because in our book, I'm not sure that the words are correct, it said something about, if I truly take this step, I cannot fail to recover. And so sure enough, I figured, well, to me, I took this step, let's go. And I heard this earlier today from someone else, and it's something I've lived with all my life. All that third step promise means is that I'm going to start working step four, and I'm going to go all the way through to step 12. It doesn't mean any more or any less than that. There's no guarantees. I'm not going to get a star. I'm not going to get anything else. But I'm going to recover. I will not fail to recover because God's with me, and I'm with Him. And together, we can recover. Together, we're bigger than this disease. There is no power that is greater than our higher power with us together. That is the greatest power you have. Unless you want to throw in the meetings. And you want to throw in other people in the fellowship. Because that's how higher power is strengthened. Because every time I'm in a room with other compulsive overeaters, people who are in OA, this is the other half of God that I had. It's like a stream of love. And the more people that contribute to the stream of love, like all you people are today, the stronger the higher power gets, the more we can feel it, the easier it is to live in this recovery. We have to. We have to succeed. I don't know about you, but in my area, the way it's shrinking, it's not getting bigger. And yet, I need this program. I want it. And I want it and need it. And I need thick days like this. I need people to be like this. To be wanting and willing to do the stuff. And then to go ahead and do it. Am I doing it? That's it. Am I doing it? Where am I? Steps 4 and 5. When I first came to this program, I heard step 4. I thought I was going to shit my pants. I am not going to do that. I am not taking that inventory. And just about the time I'm all done carping about step 4, step 9 comes along and they hit me in the head with a hammer. But step 4, I will never take this inventory. But I was able to do an inventory based on those letters to God that I was writing. That became my fourth step in how I did it. I plugged individual people and individual, myself as a father, myself as a son, and I'm not going to say the obvious, myself as a boss, myself as an employee. I put myself in all these categories, answered the questions from the OA, 12 and 12 step 4, and I could look back at my letters to God, because that's what I was writing about. I was writing for the first time to God the things that I could never admit to people in the past, the things I could never say, the things I could not voice and make myself more normal. I had to hide those. So in that fourth step, it was a total opening and blossoming, something I had never done before. So this was truly unique to me and a fabulous consequently, I couldn't wait to head through the fifth step. I asked the person when I went, I said, listen, I'm not real close yet, but I want you to hear this. I want you to hear all. And so certainly, when the fifth step was done with this person, it was such a release. I heard this earlier, and I felt the same way. There is not a feeling that matches that feeling for me in this recovery program. Of being able to open up and now have all this burden, all these things. There's no more lies, no more hiding that can keep me from God. There's nothing left. I've said it all. I've done it all. Now, obviously, there were more things I had to get to later. But at that point, that was the feeling. It was a total release. It was so wonderful to be there. And the person that told me about step 5, that heard my step 5, gave me a very good warning. She said to me, she said, step 6 and step 7 can be very tricky. And a lot of people fall flat on their face with those steps. So be very careful. Read them carefully. Understand them. And don't think that they are going to be completed at a very regular rate. So sure enough, I took that to heart. And what I came to find out about character defects is that an awful lot of character defects are just like us. Because we ate too much, they became terrible. And because we acted out too much, they became terrible. But, like, for example, determination can be something that is a positive and a good thing. But stubbornness is taking that way too far. So a lot of the character traits that I had needed to be drawn back and pulled back into balance. And that's the key for me with those steps, is that the balance has got to be found. We can't think that we're eliminating all of this from our lives and that we'll have nothing there, because that's not true. What's true is that we don't have to act out on the extremes anymore. We can stay in the middle. It's like spinning a plate. You know, I don't know if any of you are old enough. Do you remember guys who used to spin the plate? And they just had this place that, you know, when you're in the middle of the plate, it's really easy. When you're out on the end, you're going to get tossed off. And that, I think, is what she was trying to tell me, is that you have to draw these things back in. You have to find the balance.
you have to find a way to be able to live life in accordance with your own traits, your own feelings and emotions, but also one that is now God-driven. So, you know, none of us are going to walk around holier, at least me. I'm not going to walk around holier than now. It just doesn't happen. But I now have a great basis, because when I get irritated and something's bothersome, I start thinking of that spinning plate and say, well, I better get back in the middle of the plate because I'm in trouble. So, now there are some character traits that obviously we do have to eliminate, you know, our prejudices and some hatreds, if you will, of things that you grew up with, you know what I mean? Being of a Southern European descent in Buffalo, New York, meant that you hated all the people who came to Buffalo before you and settled before you, you know, and all the ones that after you that were settling and after you, because they weren't good people, you know. This is what was built up. It was just what it is. But that doesn't mean that I have to keep that for the rest of my life. So I can shed those things. But the balance things are important, because that has to be done on a daily basis. That has to be done with step 10, if you will. That's got to be done. It's all part of it. So I'm through, pretty much through 6 and 7. You know, like I said, I will do them forever. And then I make a list. Before I got here, there is no way. I said, I will stay in step 5, 6, and 7 the rest of my life. I will not make a list of people. I will not make amends to people. I won't do that. I can't do that. Blah, blah, blah. Sure enough, just like step 4, when I got there, I was ready. When I got there, I was ready with steps 8 and 9. Some of the people became obvious to me that I needed to make amends to. And let me strongly recommend that before you start thinking that you know everybody that you make an amend to, that you talk to your sponsor. Because some people that you think you made an amend to, you just thought poorly of them. You never really said anything to them to harm them. So if you walk to them and say, you know, I used to think you were an idiot, you will then have to make an amend. So let's not make amends for things we don't need to make an amend for. Talk with your sponsor. It's the best way to do it. And, you know, we're not going to solve the biggest problems first. We're not going to solve the biggest situations first. So go with some of the easier ones, maybe the ones that make you feel good or this and that. But do them all. Make all those amends. And there's two things I want to talk about in the amends process. One is, this gentleman that I was sponsoring said to me, Bobby said, I have to make this amend, and the person is dead, I don't know what to do, and I think that I should make a contribution. I'd like to make a monetary contribution. And because the man was not rich, but he had money, he could do it. He was a retired teacher down in Buffalo, they make a lot of money. So sure enough, he was going to make this wonderful donation. And I said, well, who are you going to make it to? He spewed off his favorite donation, or his favorite charity. And I said, well, that's great, but isn't that your favorite charity? He goes, yeah. Why don't you make it to a charity you hate? You know what I mean? If you're not real hot, I mean, I don't want you to make it to the American Nazi Party. I'm not saying that. I don't mean that. But if you've had a prejudice against a diverse community, make it to that diverse community. You don't necessarily like black people, great. Make it to the United Negro College. Make it to somebody that you don't personally have a stake in, because it was so much more meaningful. And he was grateful, and he did that, and it worked. You know, it worked for him. So I'll pass that along to you. It worked for him, so maybe it'll work for you if you get there. And the other one is, in my own life, because I would spew an awful lot of bile, and I didn't want people close to me. There were people that I would see once, never again, didn't know them, never knew their name. You're a dirty son of a burp, burp, burp. You are this, you are that, and I would blast them. Now, these people I definitely owe them to, okay? I don't know who they are. I'm never going to convince them. So I came up with a way that was, taking my own advice from this gentleman, something I didn't want to do. Because I was heavy,
all my life. People said,
oh, you'd make a great Santa Claus. You would make a great, you'd fit right in the suit. You would be in bed.
So that is exactly what I did. I became Santa Claus every Christmas. And I did this for years and years. And I came to love the duty that I hated at first. I came to love it because I could express myself to these people, young people, who are growing up and showing them what love is, sitting on, you know, on their, having them sit on your lap and sharing with them these lovely stories. You know, oh, are you going to go? Oh, I know you're going to go. It go on and on and on. And I did this for elderly people. I would go into nursing homes, and I would be Santa Claus for the elderly. More fun than for the kids. I would say, you can sit on my lap, but you change their diaper because you're not getting my suit wet. And they would laugh. But it was wonderful. You know, the people were, they were so appreciative. I saw an entire family, and I just retired from Santa Claus this past Christmas. The girl sat on my lap. She was 16 years old. Nah, don't make any stories. She was 16 years old. She sat on my lap, and I said, oh, I'm sure you're one. And I gave her the present that whoever had given me, gave to her, that's it. So afterwards, I'm upstairs, and I'm talking to people, and they said, you know, our daughter was 1 year old when you started playing Santa Claus. And she sat on your lap. And you're the only Santa Claus she knows. And now, I had seen their entire family, because there was only one little kid left who still believed in Santa Claus last Christmas. And he sat on my lap, and I'm pretty sure next year he's not going to be believing in Santa Claus. I saw their entire family through the belief in Santa Claus. It's a blessing that I would have never, ever had. A feeling of joy and just total humility that I would never have had I not been in this recovery program. If you are not doing it, start doing it now. There are tremendous rewards. There are wonderful things we can do. Step 10, okay, let's go. Step 10 is just living 4 through 9 every day. And if you're bored living in 4 through 9 every day, you better concentrate on 4 because you're in trouble. This is the joy. This is what we have. We live this way because it's so much better than what we ever had. I was on a diet for a million times. It's the second I said the diet's over, I was eating again. I have been at a weight or lower weight for the last 21 years. This is impossible to believe. It's impossible for me to believe that that was going to be the case. But it is. It's the case. So it's a great feeling to live in steps 4 through 9. It's not boredom. It's regularity. It's the permanence that we talk about that we need to make sure that we stay right where we are and stay in this recovery program. Stay with the people that you love in the program. Find new people to love in the program. Bring them in any way you can. And it's all going towards 12, I'm sure. But in step 11, I want to continue. This is what this convention is about. Living in the spiritual life. We have to know that God is with us. We have to know that we can walk to Him every day and He'll be there for us. We have to know that the wonderful people in this recovery program may need us right now, but someday we may need them. And that's why we keep going. That's why we do what we do when we do it, whenever we can. We never know when the tables will turn. How many of us have slipped? We heard a person say that this might be her last recovery. God forbid. It'll never be her last recovery. She doesn't realize, maybe, that we're always going to be here for her. We will always be here for her. And when she comes back,
if she ever has to go. We'll hug her and say, we love you until you can love yourself. That's the most important thing that we can give each other with this living in the spiritual life. And as far as step 12 goes, we need to bring people in. But the other part of step 12 is service. And that's the part I would like to concentrate on. Service is a question. Service? Service? And you know what the answer is? Yes. Yes. I will do this. I will do it. Because nothing but nothing will keep you healthier in this recovery program than by getting out of yourself, helping other people, being at the meetings, moving the chairs, moving the tables, joining in a group, being in an office, helping with whatever you can. I have been blessed with service at or above the intergroup level. And it's just a wonderful, wonderful feeling to be part of the fact that we had two beautiful Region 6 conventions in Niagara Falls, Ontario. 800 people came to the first one. Over 700 came to the second one. We showed Region 6 how to make money on three conventions. We showed them how to make money because we not only were we successful with the message, we made gobs of money for them. When they needed it the most, we made the money. And that's what we need to do. This is a program of spirituality. I recovered physically because I had emotional problems that could only be solved with a spiritual growth and a spiritual recovery. I dragged my sorry butt around only because I have been able to bring it with me by healing the emotional side of myself. There is my disease. It's all in my head. It's all emotional. The body is the poor bastard that had to suffer for all those years before I got into recovery. And the growth, the spiritual growth, that each of us can feel and each of us can be in is shared in this room, that river of love that comes through here because we're all together. We're all contributing to this river of love, to this higher power. That's our joint higher power. And I'll tell you what, I was at the World Services Convention in New York, God knows when it was, years ago, and to be on stage because someone asked me to help Roseanne. She wasn't feeling well. I'm with Roseanne, and I'm helping Roseanne at the convention. And the feeling of love, the power of the meeting is there. You know why? Because we're all there for the same purpose. We all want to recover. We all want to help ourselves. The best thing we can do, get abstinent so you can help yourself and help others. That's what we need. We need more than ever to be excited about this program, to be with it, to be, am I doing it? Yes. Yes, I am. And I don't mean me, I mean you. We are all doing this together today. I don't know how close I am to being 50 minutes, but I am all done because you folks have made me the happiest person in the world today, letting me be here and speak with you. Thank you very much.
Of this disease. Wow. Thank you. I'm like a little kid.
Reverse Santa.
Yeah, reverse Santa. There it is.
Very nice. Thank you very much. My mother and dad.
Keep coming back, it works.